Consistency is king, Carl. Consistency is king.
Hey, it's all about consistency, right?
That's one of my favorite drawings of yours, but yes, we are being consistent. We are back 2 weeks in a row. I always tell my clients and really anyone that'll listen, if you want to do something, you have to put it on the calendar.
Ooh, nice. Just writing it down too, right? I think Justin Suha, he's a big timer that I follow as far as like when it comes to positive self reinforcement, that sort of thing. And he says if you care about it, the first thing is just writing it down. Put it on the calendar.
Yeah. A mentor of mine used to say the pen is for remembering, the mind is for thinking. You ever have those moments? I get it a lot where it's like, I think of something that's a great idea. And if I don't write it down, I like have to search my brain, like rack it for finding what it was I was thinking. And it stresses me out.
I agree. Sorry, my puppy is barking. Hey, come here.
Speaking of taking those dogs, but there's another example. You know, you and I were talking before we got on the call. Like, I'll put on walk the dogs. I'll put on, do my workout, because if you don't put it on the calendar, inevitably someone else's time will take priority. So
100%. Also, too, I think we could both agree. Like the earlier in the day that you get it done, it kind of also helps you set priority for the tone of the rest of the day. And I need to do a better job of that, because there's so many things I'm like, yes, I'll get to it. Yes, I'll get to it. And before you know it, it's time to get ready to bed. And you're like, oh man, I still going to get to it. And it's not a good place to be.
That reminds me of a new drawing for you, especially with the iPad. You ever hear the book by Brian Tracy called Eat That Frog?
Yes, I have heard of Eat That Frog.
That'd be a great drawing. I could see someone, half a frog sticking out of their mouth, but I agree with you. You know, get that hardest, most important task done early, and you can relate it to get your workout done.
Oh, see, I was thinking of, you could relate it to The Mandalorian. I'm not sure. I'm a big fan of that show. And so Baby Yoda, he eats baby frogs. Little frogs. So, in the last Mandalorian related cue that I posted about like the hook rip, this is the way, that was extremely well received. So who knows? I think it's a great idea. Eat the frog.
Can I be honest with you before we dive into this topic about The Mandalorian?
Yeah, of course you can.
I stopped halfway through season 2.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I trust me. Listen, I understand how it's certain strokes for certain folks. I mean, some people are all about, like, I never even got into Game of Thrones, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to be like,
never watched that.
Like, what is wrong with you? I understand. I get it. To me, like, I'm a Star Wars geek. I always will be. And there's just something about that sci-fi that I love. So, hey, well, I understand, man.
I'd never got into Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, Star Trek. But I think I'm just a peripheral Star Wars fan. I really love the movies. I love this story. I love how you can relate the story to almost anything. You want to relate it to Buddhism, you can do that. You want to relate it to, a Greek tragedy, you can do that. But I was just getting bored with The Mandalorian.
Well, I'll tell you what, along the lines of like making it relatable, you've asked me this before about like, how do I think of cues or like, how do I remember them? Or, do I think about them when I'm working out? And obviously, the answer is yes. But like what I've started to do more now too, is also look at not necessarily pulp culture, but just, maybe pulp culture, but just like look at everyday life and see like, how can I relate something that is a common phrase nowadays and relate that to movement somehow. I guess a perfect example is The Mandalorian. This is the way, and talking about the hook grip. It's like, that's just how it is. Like, you want to get better. You put so much violent force into that bar when you're Olympic weightlift, you have to hold on to it with a hook grip, or else sooner or later, it's just going to be a burden to you. So stuff like that is fun for me.
But do you ever get concerned as an artist? You know, you have a very niche fan base I would say it's broader than just CrossFitters. Call it fitness enthusiasts.
Yeah,
but definitely. Really, what's that, 1% of the population? So you have a small fan base. Now you're going deep into a deep fan base. Do you ever feel like, oh, I like this, The Mandalorian or Thanos or any kind of pop culture reference, but then do you feel like you're leaving out the people that are like, I don't understand this?
it's always a risk. The more than anything, whenever I share something, some kind of content, my ultimate goal is just to make it relevant. I want to make it relevant to the majority of the people who see it. So they're like, oh, okay, that makes sense to me. I can use that, whether it's in my own personal practice or whether I'm coaching somebody else. And sometimes it's a risk when you start to get into a niche, say like pulp culture, and try to make a crossover or, but you never know unless you try. And another one, you know, we've mentioned Gary Vaynerchuk on here before too. And he, like, you got to be able to try different things. And it's like, if you want something to grow, I'll tell you, I'm certain of a way not to make something grow, and that's to not do anything. So you got to do something, and you might as well just try different things, and you never know until you try. So yeah, man, that's a good point.
And there's tons of quotes out there about, you know, if you, the key to failure is trying to make everybody happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. I saw recently, it's like, if you want to make everybody happy, sell ice cream. That's the way to do it. All right. Well, let's get into today's drawing. Obviously, as we did last week, you're putting up newer revised drawings for everyone that we cover. So those will be up every Monday along with the podcast. But we're looking back at the original right now, dated April 7th, 2019, titled Brush Up Your Shirt. Mm-hmm. And your subtitle, if you will, is For Hitting Hip Pocket. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go ahead and read the copy. All right.
Go for it.
Brush up your shirt. When? For hitting brushing the hip pocket during the clean and snatch. Why? During the pull of the snatch, the bar will contact the body in any properly executed lift. Hips with snatch, upper thighs with clean. The bar must be as close to the body as possible prior to contact without dragging. The closer the bar is before contact, the closer it will naturally stay, just like a ball bouncing. For more information, please read Hips Meet Bar Body Contact and the Extension of the Snatch and Clean on the Catalyst Athletics website. Man, you love Greg Everett.
I love Greg Everett. I do. And it's so funny because I had forgot that I referenced him in this caption. And in my mind, I was like, oh man, I want to reference this other thing by Greg Everett. And so I brought it up on my screen here before we started talking. And I was like, oh gosh, of course, this is by Greg Everett as well. I just like how, I mean, first of all, you look at his context, his catalog of work, and how much of his life he's dedicated to explaining movement with the Olympic weightlifting moves. And he just knows his stuff. And if you listen to watch his videos and you listen to him talk, he's straight to it. He knows that there isn't necessarily a one size fits all, but there are some truths about Olympic weightlifting that you cannot get around. And this is one of them. And when I say truths, what I'm talking about, he's got an article that says the 6 truths of Olympic weightlifting technique. The second one, the first one I'll just say is this: the lifter in the barbell system must remain balanced over the feet. We always talk about balance. We always talk about how the most important connection is the feet with the floor, and then everything after that is kind of like the secondary, which is still very important. But the truth number two is this: the barbell and the lifter must remain in close proximity to each other. Now, if that's true, then that means that when that bar makes that upward motion, that it brushes up, it's going to brush, likely it's going to brush up your shirt there, and it's going to let you know if you're within quote close proximity. So there, I mean, there's a whole many reasons why I like this cue. But I wanted to kind of get the conversation started tonight with going back to the 6 truths that he mentions.
Yeah. And you get into a lot more detail even than that within the drawing. You're talking about the first pull, the brush point, the triple extension. But let me ask you this: in your copy, you talk about actually, maybe you don't, you know, let me phrase it this way. There's,
sure,
I wouldn't say an argument, but I would say there's 2 different viewpoints of, do you have to hit the bar versus, you know, and I would call that more of the new school method. You know, you got your Greg Everett's, your John North's, and a lot of other lifters. Coach B basically encourages a straight bar path. And yeah. I would say, not that he's not one of the highest level coaches out there, and he coaches some truly amazing athletes, including his, you know, kids, but I think he also appeals more to the masses and the newer coaches and newer athletes.
So that's a really good point. He also, one of his big cues is he talks about how Olympic weightlifting is a vertical sport, and we always want the bar to be going in that upward trajectory. Also, though, he talks about that there is a brush. It's a brush with the hips. And so it's not like, I don't think it's two separate camps. If there's any kind of difference between, if we're talking about, say, John North, Greg Everett, and Mike Bergner, I think there's more of a similarity between Everett and Bergner, because I feel like John North, he, especially with some of the techniques that he uses to coach these movements, there's more of a bang. There's more of a, it's a pop of the hip against the bar. And he, and if you, I don't know. I
mean, don't you have a drawing about that as well? Don't you have a brush, not a bang?
Yeah, I've got a brush, not a bang. And actually I referenced Sonny Webster on that one, who's also a phenomenal resource for anyone in Olympic weightlifting. But John North, there's, again, I greatly admire him. I mean, I hold him in the highest regard there, but it's, I haven't referenced him in a lot of my drawings, just because it's not exactly how I have learned these movements. And maybe I should, because I still want to learn more about that, but there's one technique that he uses where he actually is it's kind of like a hump. It's basically like you're humping the bar, and there's like the path of the bar actually makes like a C, like it goes around in front. And again, I need to get more educated on exactly why he's teaching it that way. But regardless of what camp you're in, I would say that you would agree that there is contact with the bar and the hips at the top of that second pole there. So,
I had John North at my box teaching a seminar back in the day at Albany CrossFit, and all of the members that took it the next day, they were sending pictures of these huge purple thighs smashing the bar into themselves. And, you know, cool story from that is one of my coaches who helped with my book, my Own Your Eating book, the nutrition book, also co-authored John North's book. He met there, and it was one of those situations where he took a ton of notes, reached out to John North, and he was like, hey, will you help me, you know, turn this into a book? And I just thought it was a cool expression of, hey, sometimes just put the work in, and it's not about being lucky. It's about, you know, being at the right place and working hard.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I mean, that kind of goes back to the post that I did today, which was actually kind of, I wouldn't say controversial, but there were a difference of opinions on it, when I talked about the higher your desire for success, the fewer choices you have. And what I meant by that is, if you have a low desire for success, if you say you care, but you really don't care, then your choices are wide open. You can work whenever you want. You can rest whenever you want. You can eat whatever you want, do whatever. But if you have a high desire for success, say you want to write a book, like your friend there, working with John North, you basically find the discipline, you find a successful plan, and you stick with it. And so now your choices of doing anything whenever you want and however you want to do it have now been delineated to, like, stick with it or not, or get up early or sleep in, or stick with your plan or deviate from it. So I just thought that was pretty interesting. Zach Evanesh, he introduced me to that post with Nick Saban, and I just had to, like, think about it. I was laying in bed, and I came up in my mind with, like, this graph that I drew for this one today. So anyway,
you know, it's funny you mentioned it, because I was looking at it earlier and I was thinking to myself, man, I'd love to dive into one of your mindset posts.
Yeah. Let's do that next week. I'd love to do that as well.
And, you know, and really, to me, when I look at that post and I hear you talking, I hear Jocko, discipline equals freedom.
Yes, exactly.
And that's absolutely what you're saying. Like, when, I can't believe this, was it truly controversial? I didn't look through the comments, but what could be the controversy of it? It makes a lot of sense. It's like knowing your values, right? When you know your values and you live by them, everything's an easy decision.
Yeah. The initial controversy was I included something that Nick Saban says about how the generation today, they aren't, the generation today, the youth today, many of them aren't told no. Many of them aren't told that you have to do something a certain way in order to get results. And so they think that they can do whatever they want and still get results. And that's not the truth. Like you don't have many choices. Your choice is like work hard or don't, basically. And so anyway, I included the initial copy from Nick Saban's quote in there. And then people were like, this is ageism, or this is
ageism, reverse ageism.
They're like, age doesn't have anything to do with it. I'm like, well, okay, you're right. It doesn't, because this applies to anybody everywhere. So I was like, you know what? I appreciate, you know, I'm always going to be open to other people's opinion. And so I was like, how about this? To stick with the overall and the main idea, the main meaning of this post, let me take that out. You let me know how you think, how it works. And it didn't change anything at all. I feel like the caption still reads the way I want it to. But it's just interesting how people pick up on certain things.
Well, in fairness, I'm going to go a little bit behind the curtains on Carl. He gets very upset about any. You're going to have 99 very positive comments and one person. And you get, I don't think you get upset, but you take it. This is your passion. This is your baby. Yeah. You know, we're going to have a baby come out in a couple of weeks. If someone says it's ugly, I'm going to be like upset, even if everybody tells me it's cute. But let's be honest, this generation is soft. I said it, not Carl. Of course, if you're listening and you're from this generation, we're not talking about you. So, you know what my favorite, going back to brush up your shirt, this is one of my favorite jokes when I teach the snatch. And I always say this, pretend like you're at Mardi Gras. And then I'll pull out like one of the ladies, like I'll be like, Sally, you know what I'm talking about. And it takes them a couple seconds to get the reference. And then usually they're like, and then my follow-up joke is like, don't worry, you'll laugh at that tonight. But it's, you know, same principle, brush up your shirt, lift up your shirt, zip up your, you know, don't say that to the kids, obviously, but zip up your shirt. And it's all the same principle. So let's take it back. You know, I agree with what we're saying. It doesn't matter whether you're hitting, it doesn't matter. It's all about that straight bar path. And I really think that's what Coach Bergner talks about. He's like, somebody brand new, they don't need to worry about hitting, but if you can hit it and you can keep that bar moving straight, and to give John North a little bit of credit, I forget it. I think he called it the archangel. And that would be where you would hit it so hard, but you would immediately be almost overextending backwards. And if you watch the bar path from 90 degrees, it still appears to be moving straight because at the moment of contact, you're pulling back so hard.
Yeah.
That it almost, and that's also why if you're doing it well, it doesn't hurt. It's like inertia, right? Too, the immovable force meets the, I don't remember what the.
An equal and opposite reaction.
Exactly. Sort of
Yeah, interesting. Well, I mean, another reason why I like this one as well is because this is an issue for both the clean and the snatch. I love having cues that you can have in your pocket, I guess, hip pocket, that you can use in multiple situations. And, you know, we discussed that last time with tighter is lighter. There's a few different ways you can use that. This one, regardless of whether you're coaching the clean or the snatch, there's likely an issue that you'll see with your athletes where they might not be hitting the hip pocket. They might not be keeping that bar as close as possible. And also I like it because I feel like this is a very common issue that happens with people, regardless of if there is an early arm bend, regardless if there might be some kind of deviation in the transition of their torso going upright. This focuses on a specific moment within the pull that many times people have an issue with. So if you can identify where the hip pocket is on your athlete and you can say, hey, listen, that's where your shirt tail or the bottom of your shirt's going to be. And The first time I ever described this is when we were doing, you know, you're just doing warm-ups with the PVC pipe, and it's really easy to keep that bar close and show, hey, listen, that's going to brush up your shirt, and that's what we want. We want that bar to stay close to our body. So, I mean, I would assume, that, have you ever used this specific cue before you even saw it on Whiteboard Daily?
Well, like I said, I might not have said brush up your shirt. I tend to say zip up.
Yeah.
But yeah, same principle. You know, I like to say straight bar path is an easy bar path, or like last week's topic, tighter is lighter. Yeah. You know, keeping that bar close to your body. Let me ask you this. I find not only for myself, but for many people I coach, we're able to do this. Then all of a sudden it gets heavy and we start pulling a lot earlier.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
What do you think causes that?
That's a really good point. That's why it's so important when you are a coach to understand how it feels to be an athlete, because it's so easy for us to sit on the outside in our own world, our own mental imagery, that we're watching somebody do something and you're like, no, you need to keep the bar closer, or you need to extend now, or what. But you forget how the athlete feels when they have 135 pounds, 185, 95 pounds in the bar. You forget how it feels when they're in a loaded environment, okay? And it's very humbling to understand that you need to take weight off the bar in order to feel how the movement is supposed to be. But we're in it for the long haul. And here I am, I train, the majority of my training is done by myself in my garage. And it's been so nice because there's zero ego here. It's me and the weight on the bar. And I don't, like, if I'm not feeling a certain way, I take weight off the bar to make sure I feel the brush up the shirt, to make sure I feel like my hips, my shoulders and the bar rising together, that sort of thing. So
you are a perfect example. I think really everybody is, of how you do one thing is how you do anything, because as meticulous as you are with your drawings, you are with your lifting. Like if anyone watches your lifting, you post quite a bit in your stories of your lifting, but you also, you know, probably about once a week, put something on the main feed as well, but you move really well. And it's obvious that no different than, you know, making each drawing, you know, where me, I'm a done is better than perfect kind of guy. You know, it's the podcast, record, no edit, throw it up, power clean, get that thing to your shoulders, you know?
Ground to shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, that means a lot to me, but I strongly feel that if I'm going to be giving cues to other people, if I'm going to be sharing content with other people, that I want to move well. I want to demonstrate movement well. And this goes back to even, you know, me being a coach before I even started Whiteboard Daily. It's like, man, if you're a coach, like with great power comes great responsibility. You want to make sure that you're like setting the standard and leading from the front. And if you're telling somebody, man, your movement is trash, but your own personal movement is trash, then look at the source of where they're getting their information or their knowledge. So thank you. That means a lot to me because it's something that I hold with high regard. And I just, I want to make sure that I'm moving well. And also let's face it, the better that you are move well, the better your mechanics, the more successful you're going to be with regard to performance and also health. So I don't want to.
And we've talked about it numerous times, you know, you're 6'7", right?
Yes, my girls, my daughter, and my wife, we measured ourselves recently, and I'm 6'6" now. I think I shrunk.
Shrinking.
Yeah, right. But anyway, 6'7" with my lifters on.
But you have to lift a little more perfectly than my height at 5'3".
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, it's more the taller you get, the longer your levers are, the more important it is that you maximize the efficiency. I would agree with that. Yeah.
So let's talk about another concept, you know, where I have found many people can hang more than they can pull from the ground.
Yeah.
What's your feet? Obviously, you know, we're kind of pulling a little bit away. The concept of brush up your shirt holds true whether you're going from the hang or from the ground. But what's your opinion on that? What have you seen that as well?
Yeah, I've definitely seen that as well. I think what that is, this goes back to looking at the Olympic weightlifting movements as a long compound sentence, okay? Say the sentence has 10 words, okay? But the hang clean has 6 words, okay? So now it's a shorter sentence and it's easier to say that sentence rather than saying a longer sentence. And so you're able to kind of abbreviate that sentence, okay? And so the longer, there are more words there that are in the sentence, it's easier to mess up that sentence, okay? So the less words you have, it's easier to say. So I think what happens is that people, when they start pulling from the floor, those people who can hang clean more than they can clean from the floor, likely that first pull is putting them out of position somehow, some way. And that kind of leads into this domino effect that travels through the chain for the rest of the pull. And when they go from the hang, they're able to take out that first part of the sentence that they weren't able to speak well. And they can just concentrate on the words that they can speak well. That might be a bad example, but I'm trying to think of like a different way to like look at something. So you're able to like just say, hey, listen, I'm not good from the first pull. I'm just going to concentrate on the stuff that I am good at, and that's from above the knee. And so I think that a lot of times you're able to hide different errors if you go from like a shorter version of the clean, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Fern's on here.
Hey, Fern, you going to join us, bud?
He's muted.
No, sorry. I was hopping on. I was trying to figure out where this other call is coming to. It's clearly not coming to this line, but it's good seeing both of you.
Special guest feature today.
I see it, Duff and Fern. So you hop it off, you get welcome to stay on. Carl, no, I like, that's fun. I really like that analogy of the sentence. That's okay. Really good. I think that'd be another great drawing where you're kind of comparing that. And I think Coach Bergner says that first pull is the positional pull, and it's where you can lose position.
Yes. And that's why it's so important to understand that first pull is really just getting you in the position, like Coach Bergner says, to actually now you can pull, or now you can put some heat on the bar. The way I've also described it is this, is the first pull is like navigating. It's like you're driving a car. The first pull is navigating through the parking lot. Like you're not going to just jump in your car, slam on the gas and just like, and fly out of the parking lot. No, you have to drive through the lanes and get out of the parking lot. Second pull, now you're starting, now you're on the highway and you're getting some speed. Third pull is like maximum. You're on ramping onto the interstate and now your pedals to the metal. So there's a sequence to everything. It's not just like yank on the bar and pray. No, you can't just, there's no grip it and rip it. First pull is much slower than the rest of the movement, second and third pulls. So yeah, just getting in position, that's all it is.
So bringing it back to the idea of brush up your shirt, this is obviously important to both of the Olympic lifts, the clean and the snatch. Do you think there's any other movements where we can, you know, we typically take the topic and relate it to other movements that aren't featured in the drawing? Do you think you can relate this to anything else?
That's a really good point. I wonder if you can relate it to the med ball clean somehow. I mean, you still want to keep that ball clean. Sumo deadlift high pull, again, keeping that bar clean. There is going to be, and I think actually I've probably demonstrated, used that cue when demonstrating the sumo deadlift high pull as well, because that bar path has got to remain super close to the midline of the body. So perhaps those two. I'd say more sumo deadlift high pull than any other thing else. I mean, how about yourself? Can you think of anything?
Well, I think both of those are great movements, and the reason they're great examples is obviously the med ball clean is the Olympic lift, just with a different piece of equipment. And what we say about the sumo deadlift high pull is it has a tremendous amount of transferability, and it's a great tool for a novice to learn the Olympic lifts, to do the same mechanics without the concern of the rack position or the overhead position in the snatch.
Yeah.
From your experience, if we were to take a moment and talk about the sumo deadlift high pull, gets a lot of heat.
It does.
From the CrossFit community. What's your opinion on that?
I think it's a fantastic movement. I do understand the concern with regard to shoulder issues and impingement and that sort of thing. But man, I think in terms of teaching core to extremity, I feel like that is the first progression that really leads to making sense of what the clean and the snatch are supposed to be. It's with a bar. You're going from ground to pretty much your shoulder with sumo deadlift high pull. And, you know, if we're talking about cleaning, we're going from ground to shoulder. And there's so many similar mechanics with both of them. More than anything, again, it's core to extremity movement, where everything starts with the hips and radiates out from there. So I'm a fan of it. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I also think there's a lot of functionality. I think everyone deadlifts daily.
Yes.
You know, we pick up laundry, your kids, your dogs, et cetera. But I also think we sumo deadlift high pull a lot. You know, there's a lot of times we have to take something from the ground to whether it's a high shelf, the back of your truck, and it doesn't stop at our shoulders. I always tell the story of, I was in my hot tub when I lived in Florida. There's a hot tub in the, you know, community area. And this 80-year-old guy was in it with me. We're talking, and he couldn't get up. He stopped his leg. He's like, you know, we were joking, and he's like, yeah, I shouldn't have drank so much, blah, blah, blah. But I basically got behind him and sumo deadlift high pulled him right out, from his armpits.
Yeah.
And, wow, you know, I tell that story when I teach the sumo deadlift high pull. So before we wrap up, you have a new athlete. They're new. Hey, Carl, you know, I want to come to your garage and learn these Olympic lifts. Take me through your progression and how long it would take from never doing a clean or a snatch to you're comfortable with them, you know, using some load. You know, I'm not saying take them to 315. I'm saying like you're comfortable with them doing the movements.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So I've taught it a few different ways. I've taught it from the ground up, but I've also taught it from like basically top down, I guess you would say, where you're starting off with the receiving position. To me, I kind of like it. If we're just talking about just the clean, I like talking about top down, where I start them off with a front rack position. I get them moving through maybe like a quarter squat and then a full squat. And then from there, I'll move to the hang position. And then I will go from just like keeping that torso vertical, going from a dip and a pull under. And then from there, you kind of work your way down to positions, I guess, 2 and 3. So if we're talking about an easy way, for me, it just makes sense because I think a lot can go wrong, just like you kind of alluded to earlier in that first pull where you're like, I feel like when the bar is already in your hand, and you're already standing there with it supported, it's a different feeling than if you're pulling it off the ground. It's a lot to ask somebody to pull the bar off the ground and then get it to their shoulder in that front rack position. If you start in that position and kind of work your way down through the chain, to me, it's an easier way to explain how the movement works. So, you know, there's many different ways to, what do they say? There's many different ways to cut it, to slice an apple, to skin a cat. Yeah. So that's just one way that I've taught it in the past. And I really like that way. It's also a way that you can teach the transition of your feet going from a pulling stance to a squatting stance. Cause when you're dropping into the bar. So when you teach that early on, I think it's easier for people to understand, okay, I understand where this movement's going. So yeah, I would kind of start from that top down way. And, it's really easy for me to say, oh, and I could have them cleaning in 5 minutes, but that's not really the case perhaps, but it might not look good.
Soon is too soon? What do you think? Do you think someone should be doing a clean or a snatch on day one? Barring injury?
Again, you know, here is the magic word the magic two words in our industry is it depends. It depends on the skill level, the health level, the strength level of the athlete. So all these things kind of go into a factor. But if I'm working with, say, a high school athlete, I mean, I feel like there's no question that they should kind of understand those mechanics within the first 10 minutes or so. You can get them cleaning within the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, and then it's all relative intensity, like we talk about exactly. CrossFit, how much they're moving.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right. Well, anything to add to brush up your shirt?
No, well, last thing too, brush up your shirt. There's got to be a vertical movement with that bar. It's not pull your shirt out. It's brush up your shirt. So that's another reason why I like that, is that, remember, we're going upward with the bar. Going back to what Mike Bergner said, it's a vertical sport. We want that bar moving up, up, up. And it's a brush up, not a bang out.
Brush, not a bang.
Brush, not a bang.
Thump, not a hump. I don't know if that, I've heard one of those before. Okay. I don't know if I got that one right. But
there is kind of a thump there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like it. And again, you could check out the new drawing. You probably already have if you're listening to this show. And this is the original drawing from April 7th, 2019. Brush up your shirt. And I think if you've listened to this, head to the box, pick up that bar, load it up, and try to PR.
There you go. Exactly.
So, all right, hey. Carl, you want to take us out?
Yeah, real quick before I leave, obviously I want to thank you, Jason, for sitting down talking with me. I want to thank the listener. I do want to say something. A really cool opportunity is coming up with Velosa. You likely have seen the shoes that I have that have the snatch sequence on one. There's a WBD on the other. If you thought those shoes were pretty cool, and by now or by the time you're hearing this, we've got a really cool deal coming up with Velosa where you can get your own pair with snatch on one side, clean sequence on the other, and a nice price and a beautiful shoe. And I'm extremely excited about this partnership because they're a brand that I hold in the highest regard. So it's cool to partner with them and offer people a cool opportunity to have some beautiful shoes as well. So that's coming soon as well.
And then, you know, that takes us back to what we were talking about. I remember when you were like, oh, I like this brand. I'm going to tag them in something. You know, now they're selling your shoes. And I think for anybody listening, it's just inspirational. And they need to remember, you know, Carl's just a dude in Indiana that started drawing on a whiteboard. And now he's got this tremendous Indiana U, him and Larry Bird.
Yeah, well, Indiana State for Larry Bird. But yeah, hey, I want people to understand this. I know that. With coaching, there's a lot of theory that goes into coaching and there's a lot of like technique, but man, listen to me. Maya Angelou, she says, creativity is the one thing that you can't run out of. The more that you use, the more that you get. So I encourage people to get creative with how you teach, with how you communicate. Just take different perspectives and you will not be disappointed. So creativity, use it.
Speaking of that, I've got down this Dr. Andrew Huberman, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, rabbit hole on YouTube. Like he was on a bunch of podcasts. And a lot of it is we're not spending time away from these devices.
Yeah, true.
You know, and for me, that was really eye-opening. So, you know, think about even like when you were a kid and you would either drive somewhere, even just go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't be distracted. Solitude, you know, is really what it's all about. And it's in those moments of solitude, just like you last night. You're sleeping, you're thinking about this quote from Evan Esch, and there you have like this drawing comes to you. That's not going to come to you if you're, you know, go on Instagram, go to Whiteboard Daily, like the new pics, and then put your phone away. But the point is, for those listening, you know, creativity comes in those moments of quiet. You know, and I was guilty of like every waking moment trying to. I'm in the shower, I got a waterproof speaker, you know, pooping, I got my phone out, trying to find those moments of quiet. And you're right, like, that's when creativity, I'll tell you what, this was going back 3-4 months, and I started my coach's development group, you know, where I help people. And I was just, it was just like a moment I was sitting there and I was like, why am I not doing that? And you know, same thing, I think for a lot of people, you know, I'm not trying to preach, I'm just trying to say, Carl did it. I've done it. You can do it. And part of it is just put things away, find some quiet space every day, go for a walk, take your dogs for a walk. Or, you know, just don't. And it maybe just starts with, hey, don't bring your phone next time you go to the bathroom.
Absolutely. That's actually one rule that I've integrated. I'm not even sure if I've told my wife this, but maybe she's noticed, maybe she hasn't. But like whenever we take family walks around our neighborhood with our dogs, I leave my phone at home. Because I don't even want to touch it. I just want like time outside with the fresh air and the dogs and just my family and just walking. Man, it's like, you're so right with, oh man, it becomes too much, right? and you forget about how we as humans can just like, we've got a mind and we got our own thoughts and we can write stuff down and we don't need to have some kind of screen with us. It's a exactly. crazy feeling, but it's true.
All right, Carl.
You know, it's, yeah, absolutely. Hey, Jason, thank you again. Listeners, thank you again so much. We really appreciate it. And I want you guys to remember, as always, a high tide lifts all boats. So together, let's keep on rising those tides. We'll see you guys again next week.
Thanks again for listening to today's episode of Whiteboard Weekly. On behalf of Carl and myself, Jason Ackerman, we really appreciate the download. We really appreciate you sharing our episodes with friends, families, your box owner, your buddies at the gym, anyone that's willing to listen to us talk about all things CrossFit, all things coaching, and all things coaches development. We do this because we have an absolute love and passion for it, and we hope that you can tell that through our talking and through each episode. If you haven't already, please feel free to leave us a review on any podcast platform. It goes a long way in helping us spread the word. Once again, thanks again for listening.